able to retire when they put dirt on me.
Right.
But, I think most people are in that position in modern times.
Okay, we're going to get rolling. I think everybody's good on levels. First things first, which we should mention, which I don't know if we did previously, is it's been a long time since we've been on these mics. So apologies to our 7 subscribers.
We might be almost up to 8.
We might have a dozen. I don't know. Let's be generous with it. But yeah, we haven't been in here in the studio, big quotes, since last year. It's Friday. We had some nourishment from Debbie's Donuts in Long Beach, California, our normal snack sponsor, unofficial. Mm-hmm. So thanks, Debbie's Donuts. And here we go. It's Friday afternoon, and today we are going to be joined by Gary Sanderson of Madrid Skateboards. Gary, thank you so much for coming in and taking time out of your day, and also for sitting around for the last couple hours while we were really late getting started. So our apologies, but we're really glad you're here. Thanks for being on, and welcome to the Madrid Boardcast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This is a skateboarding podcast, man. So as with most questions, take us back to the beginning, man. How did you get into skateboarding? What was the first thing you saw about skateboarding that said, I got to get one of those and I'm going to start doing that?
Well, the first time I actually rode a skateboard was over at my cousin's house, and they had a couple of boards, and you know, it kind of amounted to just doing tandem stuff, sitting on the boards, going down the street, rolling off the back of a U-Haul trailer. It's just silly stuff. But then I started to kind of stand up on them a little bit and that, and I was like, wow, this is kind of cool and that. And yeah, I just kind of fell in love with it then, and they knew it. And I think it was on my 6th birthday. They showed up for my birthday party and gave me one of their boards.
Yeah.
And that was it, really.
Yeah. What year was this, going back that first time you even sat on one?
I want to say probably about 75, 76, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 6th birthday party, they show up and they got a new gift for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. That was an awesome gift. Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize how awesome that was going to be. But
yeah. Can you recall what that board was?
Yeah, it was a Duraflex. It had, I don't know what kind of trucks were on it, but it had these yellow transparent wheels with loose ball bearings. And that
possibly like a freeformer. Sounds like kind of a freeformer type of wheel. What do you think, Bo?
Sorry, it wouldn't have been a freeformer. It would have probably been a stoker.
Yeah, okay. But style wheel, I guess. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So what was a stoker like,
Mac? Just don't screw it up.
I'll do my best. What was a stoker like then? I mean, shape-wise?
Probably 52 by about...
Wider?
Yeah, wider.
Kind of like a freeformer?
Similar.
Cool. So it was a Duraflex.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, then at some point, I think the ball bearings fell out of the wheels. And
they'll do that. Yeah.
You know, who would have known? Yeah. And then I think I saw an ad, or it was a TV commercial. And this is it really took off for me as far as like skateboarding and ramps and pools and stuff.
Yeah.
There was a commercial for a kind of like a 7-Eleven market. I forgot what it was called. And they had their own skateboards, and they were cast plastic. They were cheap compared to the Duraflex.
Yeah.
But this guy was riding on a little wooden ramp as part of the commercial.
Yeah.
And so I says, I want one of those. And I kept pestering my dad, and finally he took me down and he got me one of those. Of course, that didn't last very long. But then it was when I picked up, it was a Hobie skateboard. It was a Mike Weed model. And it was fiberglass, real thin, but it had like a really cool graphic on it. It was a sunset type thing, but it was Mike Weed in a pipe, skating pipe.
Yeah, like a silhouette of probably in the sun. Yeah,
and actually, it was at JCPenney's.
Cool.
And it was in a, they had a little booth there, and so I got one of those, and I rode the daylights out of that. In fact, there was no tail left by the time I got done with it. It shaved off.
How old were you at this point, would you say?
Well, I had to be about seven and a half, because that board was the board I rode my first time at a skate park.
Cool. Okay.
And that was in Glendora Pipeline. And that was actually down the street from my cousins.
Awesome.
And we happened to go there one night with my cousin, and I was watching them. There was a couple kids that were really good.
Yeah.
They were riding like Sims taper kicks and things like that. And so you know, I was like, wow, that's cool. I got to try that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so on my seventh birthday, my mom took me there, and it was 100 something degrees out, yeah, and the whole works, you know. And it was one of those experiences like, wow, I'm going to remember this. I don't know if I like skateboarding after all, you know, because I did more falling than riding.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, was it intimidating that first time walking into, you know?
It was. Yeah. I think it was really intimidating, you know, going down that first time, going down and then going, okay, now what do I do?
Yeah.
Type of thing. And, but, you know, I don't know. After that, there was another skate park there in Covina, Wild Wheels. I went there. Of course, they were closing these parks down faster than you know.
Yeah.
And that. So I did a lot of skating in the driveway and places like that. And
this park was all Covina? You grew up in the
Covina West Covina area.
So what was the park up in that area? Like, what was the park closest to where you were coming
up? The closest one there was Wild Wheels.
That was Wild Wheels.
Wild Wheels, yeah. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it was funny because it was right next to the fire department. So they didn't have to go far if someone got hurt, you know. It really walked around the corner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, did that, and it wasn't until high school that I really, or maybe junior high.
Yeah.
My dad, I needed a new board, and I wanted a new board, and Valsurf was the big company, or a big one distributor, mail order business, and they had these really nice color ads.
Yeah.
And that was about the time when Sims was coming out with their different models for the different, you know, Dave Andrecht, Bowman, Burt Lamar, and Fulmer.
Right.
And there was an ad, the Valsurf ad, and it had an Andrecht model with it was black with the green and chrome inserts on the insides, with yellow Tracker mag trucks, six tracks, and green Sim Snake double conicals on it.
Awesome.
And I said, I want that.
That'll get you excited.
And
yeah,
I didn't think I was going to get it. And sure enough, it showed up at Christmas time. And that was my first pro board. And that pro board actually, in some of my designs, I took that and put that in my design. So,
man, there's so many stories, even earlier today, but, and for me personally, I mean, Christmas morning fueled my skateboarding most of my young life.
Yeah.
Because it was the same way. I mean, middle class family. I wasn't getting boards throughout the year when I needed or broke one or damaged one. It was like Christmas morning was the time to continue that skateboard journey. And so so many of my first boards and the boards I remember most, you know, you got those things on Christmas morning. It's it's a through line in a lot of these stories of kids coming up, you know, and graduating to better boards and better products. It's Christmas time, man. That's, you know, that's when your parents are spending a little money. So that's cool.
And it's, and then the funny thing, like you're saying, you know, when I got that first pro board, there was so much difference in the function and the quality of it and the way it worked. It was just, you could tell
it's a whole new game. Board, man. Yeah. Yeah.
But it, to me, it was, I was so valuable to me that it was like, okay, no scratches, no nothing.
Right.
No,
yeah. Just like, yeah.
You know,
totally.
And then when I was in high school, I met a guy, there was two guys I met. One of them, he was like a Powell, he liked Powell Peralta, and he had a J Smith, the one with the, it was a Powell logo, but it was kind of like barbed wire or something on
it. Right, yeah. It's almost splatter.
It had rolled the big, fat, rounded, conical bones and stuff, which were rad.
The rat bones.
And stuff like that. And so he, I skated with him for a while, and he had a neighbor that had a backyard pool, and they had emptied it and said we could come over and skate it. And so that was my first time doing a backyard pool. And
awesome.
Oh, my God.
The love seat and stuff like that.
Awesome.
You know? But I really started taking off with getting into it was when I met this other guy who had a ramp. The driveway to his house emptied into an alley there in Covina, and at the end of the alley he built this ramp.
Awesome.
And it was really my first time to take and experience what ride and vert was and stuff. Yeah. And that's really where I learned. I skated with him all the time, and so we kind of skated together. He was always better than I was.
Yeah.
That was Don Pollard.
Oh my God! Really?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And so, Don went on to skate for GNS and Gullwing, I think. Yeah. But that's how it took off for me, and then he and I kind of grew apart, and he was doing something else when we graduated. But I was skating contests.
Yeah.
I remember my first contest was actually at a Lakewood.
Okay.
And I signed up. It was ASPO contest. I have my shirt still. I was little.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so what color was yellow, your shirt?
Yellow.
Red.
Beginner class.
Red.
And it was in their horseshoe pool, which was notorious for having this major kink on the face.
Yeah.
As soon as you drop in and you'd hit that thing and it would launch you right off the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Type of thing.
Yeah.
Of course, the pros all knew how to get around it.
Right.
Here's Gary, his first pro contest.
Sure.
Trying to get my pads on and stuff like that, fighting all that, waiting 2 hours in the sun.
Yeah.
And dropped in, and every time I drop in, slam, drop in, jeez, slam, you know. And my dad goes, yeah, it's probably not your thing.
So. He just didn't want to buy you that board next Christmas, man. He was like, guess, let's get something cheaper.
Yeah.
And so, was that discouraging at that time to hang up on that and bail and bail and bail? Or was it like, okay, it's going to motivate me to conquer this SOB? And did it deter you at all from wanting to kind of continue?
No. Yeah. You know, when you're young, it's like, whatever. You know,
just bounce off that concrete.
Yeah. I mean, it was intimidating because I had all these, I mean, beginner class back then, you had, you know, almost 100 something kids there, you know, in that class and stuff. That was intimidating.
Sure.
But
skating in front of people and around people.
Yeah. Because I had never competed like that, you know, so
but. Were there any kids at that time in your bracket that you were seeing going like, oh man, who is this kid, like he's already like crushing it? Or was it just everybody was kind of on the same just straight out beginner level, just trying to
it do was the best pretty even keeled? I think, you know, I started paying attention to the red shirts because those were the intermediate guys and that, you know. And you know, in fact, I remember at one time, you know, seeing guys like Gator, you know, because he was in the ASPO and all that.
Right,
I remember that
right.
And stuff. And, you know, Gold Cup was the contest series back then.
Yeah.
That was actually really my first time being exposed to professional skateboarding.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was at the Pipeline, and it happened to be, I went with Don Pollard.
Okay.
And it was, there, the Gold Cup there, we sat right in bleachers right in the corner of the square pool, right, that face corner, you know, which I absolutely love that point, you know, that that was my favorite.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
And that was my first time I got to see the guys in the magazines, Steve Caballero, you know.
Awesome.
Eddie Elguera. I'm trying to think of the other, Mickey Alba, I remember when he was on GNS, and Dwayne Peters and all those guys. And that was amazing to me because that was just at a whole nother level.
Yep.
And I mean, that's where it really, I got bit pretty hard.
Yeah. Then. That's where it really, really, really began.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what happens when you see guys that are, I mean, even when I was coming up, just skating with all my friends who got better than me super quickly, it was still great to skate with these guys because it made you want to skate better and harder and try stuff that you maybe normally wouldn't try. So that friendly competition is huge. Just seeing guys doing stuff that is real, that's what makes you want to go and like really figure it out and try harder, even though so many of my friends surpassed me very early on. Yeah. But, you know. So what happened after that point in regards to, I mean, maybe even how, so we're talking really just a few short years later, maybe Bo's coming into the picture, or you're skating more contests, you know, like what's your trajectory after that first kind of exposure?
You know, I can't remember exactly what had happened, but I know I was skating a holiday series and I was intermediate, I think it was at the time. Mm-hmm. But it was a holiday series. They had the turkey shoot at Whittier.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the Christmas shootout at Upland. And I was favored at the time to do really good at Upland.
Awesome.
Whittier wasn't my park necessarily. In fact, that keyhole, there's some buff that keyhole there. It was really deep. It wasn't like Marina Del Rey or places like that. It was deep.
Yeah.
And I took some really bad slams there. I mean, I had one time where my hip was like, I had a ball coming out on the side of my hip.
Yeah, yeah.
But I ended up winning Whittier, and Bo was there. And then I think you went to Upland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And I got second at Upland.
Awesome.
But I won the series.
Cool.
And I was like, I'm stoked.
Just stoked, man.
You know,
do you have sponsorship at the time? Were you riding for a team or a shop or anything like that?
No.
What do you recall what you were riding? What was your board set up at the time?
At that time, I had the next era of Brad Bowman boards, which was the one with like the digital kind of graphics on it. Right. And I was riding
made by Madrid.
Yes. Yep. Tracker trucks. Yeah, I love my tracker trucks. Yeah. And then I was using the GNS 5050s at the time. I got that from the Gold Cup watching the GNS guys with their 50-50s.
Yeah.
I always thought those were cool.
Awesome. Yeah. So you're starting to kind of pick up a little momentum. You're winning contests. You're placing, but no sponsorships at this time.
No. Yeah. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, I always felt like if I'm ever going to get sponsored, I want to make sure I earned it type of thing. You know, I didn't want to go, hey, you know, begging for sponsorships and stuff like that type of thing. And I don't know, I didn't realize it, but I mean, one night out of the blue, Bo called me and he said, hey, this is Bo Brown with Madrid Skateboards. I'm the team captain. He says, we want to sponsor you. And I about passed out at that point. I mean, that was monumental for me at that time. That was probably one of the
that was a scary
greatest
call
moments.
Too.
Yeah.
That was the greatest moments of my life.
That's all. What made you make that call, Bo? Where did you see him did you know about him at that time early on?
Well, back in ASPO days, which was Association of Skate Park Owners, and it was the amateur contest, but you had to be sponsored by a park. It was either I guess except for like the open division.
Right.
You know, you could be an AM sponsored AM, but I was a blue shirt guy at the time.
Yeah, just let's interject quickly right there. What was the delineation of the colors? Yeah, yellow shirt, red. What was the breakdown
there?
Was it. Tell us
yellow
about that.
Yellow shirt was beginners. Okay. Red shirt was intermediates. Okay. Mm-hmm. Blue shirts were your advanced or open or sponsored guys.
So that was top tier was blue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or old.
Yeah. Same thing, man. Top tier is old. It's all, you know, look at this. So, we're, you know, you age like a fine wine, man.
Yeah, or fine milk.
So you're hanging with the blue shirts.
Yeah. And, you know, I was riding for Madrid, but at that time I wasn't even the team captain yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Kind of kept my eyes open.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to know who was doing what. So I knew of Gary and the whole family, which we'll get into in a minute. But, I was going to all the contests. You know, first I was sponsored by Skatopia Skate Park and then ended up riding for Lakewood for a little while.
Yeah.
And then the Hoffmans, you know, had me just join their little crew at Upland for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been seeing Gary skating, you know, since he was probably a red shirt guy and an intermediate guy.
Yeah.
But when I became a team captain,
really became your job to go out there scouting out the guys in the scene.
And I saw what, you know, Powell was the rock star. Sims was they were the rock stars.
Yeah.
And I wanted I wanted the rock stars, of course, but I also wanted guys like Gary who wanted to be on Madrid.
Yeah.
Not just looking for a stepping stone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw the working class ethic that Gary had.
Awesome.
And I'm like, well, Chris May was the first guy I ever put on the team and see how that worked out. no, we love Chris.
Yes.
And then I remember, you know, Jerry and probably Jeff may have said it, you know, now's the time to start building the team. Because we had Roland Cabales, Paul Molina, a few kids, but not, you know, it was just kind of like.
Anybody pro at that point on Madrid?
Or was it more Smith.
Just Mike so Smith. Smith was already there. Smith was already in the mix.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Smith and Roger Hickey.
Sure. Yeah.
I remember seeing Gary doing really good at the contest. And then, you know, you killed it at Whittier and you killed it at Upland, which, of course, you would. And I told Jerry, I'm like, I want Gary to be the next guy on our team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
So making that call, like, with Chris May, I had seen him at Lakewood Skate Park all the time, and you know, we knew each other. So, you know, I was able to walk up to him and yeah. go, you know, hey, doing this, but to make that call and say, yeah. I'm yeah. the team captain.
Yeah. Representing yourself and the company as this big yeah, professional kind
that
of
that was like
putting on some airs to step it up.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So he was really cool about yeah. it though. He yeah, was man. Yeah, he was good.
I believe it. Yeah. At that point, and there's no wrong answer here, but was Madrid on your radar? I mean, did you yeah. look at what Madrid or, you know, admire the team, respect what they were doing? You obviously kind of knew Bo, like
I knew of Bo. I didn't know Bo yet. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I'd seen him around at the yeah. skate park and that. But Don Pollard and I, you know, Mike Smith was one of the skaters sure. we really liked his, totally. You know, his skating and yeah. his style. And there was some about, there was, we had gotten, back when Thrasher was still like a newspaper.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was like a centerfold of Mike at Colton mm. doing this Smithbert, I think it was in that. It may have been mm-hmm. another mag, but anyways, it was a really cool picture of Mike yeah. doing this tweaked out Smithbert.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was about, you know, even like the little pink black heart wheels on his board
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
And I never got to go to the contest, but I obviously I guess he did really good. I think he yeah, won that. He that won was that the contest. One that he won.
Awesome.
Yeah. But he was doing all these really cool tricks and stuff, and I like the whole invert thing. To me, in that day, when you're tweaking them like that, yeah. that was rad, yeah, you know, yeah. type of stuff. And so, I know my friend Don, he really thought Mike Smith was a fantastic skater.
Sure.
I didn't really get to experience him more until I started going to more of the pro contests and that. Yeah. But I knew of Mike Smith, and there was something about his boards I liked.
Yeah.
I mean, the graphic in itself, it was kind of – in a weird way, it wasn't out there, you
yeah,
know, type of
sure,
thing.
Sure.
But, the one thing I liked, in fact, that's the board I started on when I started skating for Madrid. But,
which Mike Smith was that you started skating on?
That was the first graphics, yeah. but it was like the second part or the second version of it where they removed the dots
yeah,
from
just the
triangle.
Stripes. Yeah.
It was just the stripes. And I remember cause it was, Bo, when I talked to him on the phone, of course, I had to recover from the phone call.
Yeah, man.
In fact, it was funny. I got to go back to that real quick because I remember, I don't know if I said, Bo, I'm going to have to call you back. And so I went and I asked my parents if it would be okay, you know.
Awesome.
And it was one of those things. And of course, my parents were like, what? And they were totally blown away. And of course, I called Bo back in 5 minutes. I was like, absolutely, you know.
That's so cool, man. Let me ask my parents if I can. If I can be a professional skateboarder.
Yeah, my parents were really supportive of skateboarding. Because I didn't have a driver's license, you know, at the time, and they were driving us around to the parks and stuff.
That's always one of my first questions too. With you, same, you know, it's like, how are your parents taking all this? You know, did they look at it as a silly little pastime on a toy, or
they
supportive?
They got heavily involved with
That's
it.
Awesome. Yeah.
We definitely have to get into that because Gary's downplaying this, but the Sanderson family was so important to skateboarding, not just skateboarding in Southern California, but in keeping skateboarding alive.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
His dad was the first head of California Amateur Skateboard League.
Cool. I don't know these stories for sure, man. Yeah. Awesome. We'll get into that for sure.
Your folks and your brother and sister.
My brother and sister. Yeah. Yeah. Killer. I mean, it was
so they
a
were
family
stoked.
Affair.
They were,
oh,
they
yeah.
were stoked right from the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we set a date and he met me out at Upland and it was like Christmas for me because he showed up with a box of boards and because I was doing freestyle and stuff too. So he brought me my first Primo. In fact, I still have it.
Yeah, the Primo.
My first Primo Desiderio with
the triangle kind of geo shapes.
It was the orange graphic, the first one with the green graphic on it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And anyways, so it was like Christmas, and of course, then we did a photo shoot and stuff. I got my first – he brought me a pair of custom Vans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those were rad.
Oh, yeah, man.
And then sure enough, he set me up on Tracker. I got on Tracker,
cool.
too, at the same time, which that was a fantastic thing, too. But, man, that was it for me. I mean, I was
– So he was signed on as an AM.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were giving him, obviously, other Madrid boards.
Yeah.
Mike Smith's and stuff. Yeah. So this is an AM signing at this time.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I rode Mike's, and the reason I rode Mike's at the time, Bo, I don't know if yours was out. Yours was not out yet. No. But Mike's matched really closely to the Bowman shape.
Shapes,
and
yeah.
The right, size.
Yeah. Cool.
And I was really used to that.
Yeah.
And that's why I liked it. So.
Yeah, but, awesome.
But then Bowsport came out, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, forced that on.
There's
everybody.
Still a lot of shapes that are, you know, in the Bo Brown world, man. I mean, that kind of, I'm talking generally,
yeah.
You know, that kind of shaped but old school board when, you know, because we call them pigs, you know, all that Mike Smith kind of ramp age days, you know, you get these really crazy pig boards and you start to shape out, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. That's, Bo Brown looks like a skateboard, man. The Bo
yeah.
Brown just looks like a skateboard.
Well, thank you.
Which is probably what you're going for.
yeah, I think we've told the story. I shaped that board
yeah.
and came out with those colors because I wanted to sell boards.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so at that, okay. So Mike's your only pro at that time.
Right.
So you guys are signing up yeah. AMs primarily. Did you?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. signing is kind of a,
I use that term loosely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
building
yeah,
the team.
We were building what had become or was going to become the farm team.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But my intention was always to have the most solid damn team you could have
yeah.
Yeah.
with people who were not just all wearing the same t-shirt,
totally.
But were actually
yeah.
a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you come on in as an AM, and then what's next? What happens at this point? How you guys are focused on contest, obviously. That's
yeah.
a big part of all this, right?
A lot of contests
yeah.
and a lot of demos.
Sure, demos, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, yeah. yeah, I mean, I think hand in hand, I think that's what really got Madrid out there.
Demos?
Was yeah, I say the demos, but just both, a combination of both. Madrid
yeah.
was everywhere.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, which I always thought was cool because, when you show up to a contest, where's the Madrid banner? You know,
yeah,
you're always
yeah.
looking
yeah.
for that, right?
Totally, man.
And sure enough, and yeah. I knew Bo was there because there would be a couple of them,
yeah.
and they were strategically placed. So
dude, we have so many photos that aren't even guys that skate for Madrid, but that we have the photos because you can see Madrid in every background
yeah.
of those shots, man.
Yeah.
So credit to Bo's guerrilla marketing on
yeah.
that stuff.
Yeah.
It's true, man. That was a presence. You know,
and
it was a presence.
Yeah, yeah. That for us was really what it was about. You know, it was
yeah.
about. It wasn't just about, you know, showing up to a contest or a demo, but it was about promoting the Madrid name
yeah.
and the quality and,
cool.
and that too. So
at this point, did you have anything else taking precedent in your life, other priorities, or were you just 110% skateboarding? I mean, was it,
so
did being, I guess, kind of coming on as an AM on an actual team, did it sort of just, you just went laser focused into skateboarding? Did it kind of kick things up, or did you still have these other priorities you were kind of juggling at that point in your life?
No, I mean, I was still in high school,
mm-hmm.
So obviously that was a priority. You
yeah,
know, I had to
yeah.
do that, but
yeah.
but you know, I didn't participate in any school sports
yeah.
or anything because of skateboarding. In fact, my PE coach, actually, my grade was based on my skateboarding.
That's incredible.
And that's
man.
What he did. So I would get a grade. You know, okay, did you compete? You know, this last weekend or whatever. Yeah, coach, I got all these lined out. You know, these contests and
dude,
stuff.
That's incredible, man.
But I do remember my English teacher, was it English or my history teacher, basically said, okay, Gary, so we've heard about your skateboarding. I want you to come in one of these days, and I want you to do a demo in the classroom in front of all your classmates. He says, I'll mark your grade up if you do that.
Rad. Yeah, rad.
And so, of course, you know, you're put on the spot. And so I went in with my Primo board and stuff and did all these tricks that pulled off every – and I was so stoked. I pulled off every single one of them, man. Nailed them.
Red,
you know? And
red.
Of course, you're in there on a linoleum tile floor. You
yeah,
do
yeah.
freestyle pogos and stuff like that
yeah.
and all that. And, but skateboarding was my priority. You know, in
that
fact, as soon as I got done with school, I had a little part-time job in school. You know, I worked out for a couple hours, but I'd skate from home
yeah.
all the way up to my job and back.
Awesome.
That's how I commuted.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
that's right.
If I wasn't doing homework and stuff, I was out skating.
Yeah.
That's all I did.
And as someone who's, you know, maybe a bit of an outlier doing freestyle and I guess what we call it vert at that time, I mean, what did you find yourself getting pulled towards one or the other? Did you just still want
to
kind of do all types of skating?
Well,
or was there
to.
A point when, yeah, like you've mentioned that before, especially
yeah.
con,
well,
you got to kind of skate yeah. everything, you know? Yeah, like back
Bo,
in those days.
Bo encouraged me. You know, obviously I started out with the whole, I like the pool thing,
yeah.
especially skate parks. The ramps weren't a big thing yet. So I really like that, the vert stuff and that. But I was also impressed by the other facets of skateboarding as far as that goes. And, you know, Bo turned me on to the slalom, the bank slalom and stuff like that. And then the freestyle, I like doing that. And so one of the things I was finding here, I'm sponsored, you know, I'm going to do all the events, you know? Yeah, yeah. So to me, then it started to be not necessarily being good at one, but trying to be consistent at all of them.
Yeah. Well-rounded.
Well-rounded.
Right. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And that's why I ended up doing all the different, you know, different types.
Yeah. Which, we spoke a little bit about that. I think, I don't remember who we had in here. Maybe it was, it would have been Roger, because he was always strictly downhill. But you've mentioned the fact of just kind of having to be that well-rounded skater that could kind of do a little bit of everything back then, right? Which is awesome and fascinating, and probably one of the probably makes you a better skater across all those types of skating. If you're just kind of, you know, there probably was just less segmentation at that point when guys started to develop their own personality of skating, or you had these different facets. So you guys had to kind of cover all the bases.
Yeah, sure, and I mean, and that's how. You know, the teams got points.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And the higher the points were, you know, you ended up being the best team of, you know, this year or that year.
But then a guy like Primo, I mean, he was strictly freestyle with you guys.
He was strictly freestyle.
And he was on the team at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and so it's at that point you didn't have your Schmelzers and your Greg Smiths coming on at that point. Was Primo kind of your freestyle guy at that point?
Primo was, but then we had a couple of other guys to Henry Soria and a couple of other guys I can't remember.
There was Primo, his girlfriend Diana.
Yeah, that's right, sure.
Then there was the Soria brothers, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
And then also what was her name, the blonde girl? What's her name?
Leslie.
Yeah, she. I think she was on the team too.
Yeah, she was.
Cool. So yeah, some of those names I haven't even heard yet.
Yeah.
No. This was late Aspo, early Castle.
Okay.
California Amateur Skateboard League. So yeah, it was. I mean, Primo was pro by that point.
Yeah.
Smith was pro, and Roger was pro.
Yeah.
And they each did their own.
Clearly those guys are kind of segmented into their styles. Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
But the rest of us just kind of pretty much did everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was skateboarding.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the contest series too, they geared it around overall, you know, a winner at the end.
Yeah.
And the winner was the guy that had the most points, and the way you got most points is you skated all the events.
Doing everything. Yeah. Yeah.
You did it all.
Sure. Sure. When you first kind of, you know, when you made that phone call to Gary and you get him in the mix and you're doing these contests and demos, were you already thinking in the back of your mind, like, I want to turn Gary pro? Like, that's my next goal, is we do want to get this guy on the pro team. Or was it just, you just were kind of out there going day to day, finding guys to build the team? Or did you have it in your mind that, okay, we know that we're going to take this guy to the next level? As like kind of a scout TM guy, you know, managing the team.
I knew that he was going to be able to make it to the next level.
Yeah.
I mean, that was completely obvious to me.
Cool.
It was a matter of, excuse me, in my way of thinking, how do we get him there in a healthy way?
Yeah.
And not just have him turn into, you know, name your one-off pro, Brad
totally.
Baxter or whatever.
Yeah.
So how do we build this team?
Yeah.
Of people who skate together and want to skate together and want to grow to be this big company together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, Gary had that ethos that I wanted to see on the team.
Yeah. How long were you on the team before that transition from AM to pro? What'd you say? What kind of a window were we looking at?
God, you didn't turn pro till...
I want to say 85 or 86 is when I turned pro. It was the Tempe contest.
Mm-hmm.
But what had happened, and the cool part with Bo was, is that he wasn't pushing me to go pro or anything
right.
like that.
Yeah.
I think he was waiting for me to feel comfortable about it.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a sign of a good leader or team manager, man. That's cool.
Yeah. And that was really cool. And so there was the Castle series, I want to say in 84. I ended up winning the overall series.
Awesome.
That was like 12 contests total. It was a long series that year. And then right after that series, I was skating the Holiday Classic at Upland, and I hung up on a corner air and fell on my ribs, on my wrist, and snapped this bone right here. I didn't even know it, and I'd broken it and skated on it for another 2 weeks. And I ended up skating the contest with a broken wrist.
Yeah.
But I think it was right after that we were talking, hey, you know, I don't know if I had my amateur model at that time, or because I'm trying to remember how that transpired.
Those pictures that Jerry showed you, and you've seen those two, Eagle, of a bunch of us at the Castle Awards ceremonies.
Yeah.
It's you and me and Schmelzer and Jerry and Steve Douglas. And
yep.
I can't remember who else. And you have the cast on.
Yeah.
So that was the series that you had just won.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you came with your cast.
Yeah.
And at that point, Jerry and I were talking about, you know, what's next for this guy. You know, we're going to get him in the bigger contests, and eventually, you know, we want him to be one of the pros.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a bit before we actually kind of went live today, but with the board that you brought in, you had an amateur board with a graphic on it, but you couldn't put your name on it, right?
Yeah, so tell that story.
You really had your own board, but secretively.
I think because I had won that series, I know that Jerry and Jeff and Bo wanted to do something, you know?
Yeah.
And so we were like, hey, how about an amateur board? And at that time, having an amateur board was unheard of.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know of anybody that had an amateur board then. But anyways, I guess word got out or something, and some of the officials with Castle and that says, look, you can have an amateur board, but you can't have your name and graphics on the board. And because then there's this whole thing about, you know, hey, you know, you're getting money, you're a professional, you got to turn pro type of thing. Hmm. And so anyways, so we had put the design together, and then Bo had approached me, hey, you're going to have to figure out some graphics. So I one afternoon drew some graphics, and I mean, they weren't the greatest, but it was what I came up with. And then they ran a whole run of them, and then they had me come down one afternoon, and I sat there for a couple hours with a paint pen, and I actually signed. So anybody that has one of those boards, that is an actual real signature. That's not a screen print on there.
And that actually explains a story that I didn't know until now, because every damn board I've seen out there of that graphic has got the signature on it.
Yeah.
I've never seen one without it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you just snuck in a Gary Sanderson in there.
Yeah.
Did that graphic have a name? What do we call that guy at the time?
Scarecrow or something.
We go back, that's like the atomic headed man.
That graphic.
What was the guy with the spiky hair?
Yeah. So there was a couple of things that, back then everyone was trying to make the gnarliest looking graphics, And of course, no one could top the graphics that Bo had with the bat and that, which was, I still to this day love that graphics.
Hell yeah.
And anyways, I think Lucero had done some kind of graphic, or I don't know if he had something that he drew, and Terrence was doing some drawings too. He was a fantastic artist too. Anyway, so I was trying to compete with those guys, right? So I did do good in art school. In high school.
Yeah.
But anyways, that was my first crack at it, and it was influenced because Nightmare on Elm Street came out.
Awesome.
I also liked the old Batman 60 series.
Sure.
And so that's why you got the little question marks on the jacket and stuff like that. And originally, those holes or those little black cutouts in there was actually my name. Was in there, and they were bursting out of this package type of thing, and that was my crack at it.
Man, that's it's funny now because and Alex, one of the guys here, mentioned, he talked to you a little bit before this, and he mentioned the Freddy Krueger thing, and which is awesome. I mean, as an 80s like horror kid, you know, that's right up my alley. But especially now to see it, it's like, it's clearly the Riddler, you know. So you see a lot of that influence in that thing, but it's great to hear it from the horse's mouth what the kind of inspiration behind that thing was. To me, I think it's an incredible graphic. It's one we've been looking to do in our reissues for a while. So now that we've got a good look at it here too, which is incredible. What year was that?
85?
Probably 85, yeah.
Actual model in 85.
Yeah, it only went for like maybe a year.
Okay.
And I think we did the expo, the expo contest, which is like kind of like the Olympics. Up in Vancouver, and that was a series of events. And basically what that was it was all I don't remember them having, they might have had pros up there, but we had amateur teams that were picked.
Okay.
And they were picked by the committee to represent different areas of the United States.
Okay.
And so I was on the West Coast team.
Rad.
And I didn't do good in the ramp, but I placed third in the skate park.
Sick.
Yeah. Wow, okay. For that. Okay. And so I think it was kind of after that we just said, hey, you know, maybe now's the time to pull the trigger and go pro.
Awesome. Yeah. Keeping him at AM was just, you know, it's spinning your wheels.
You had to do AM as a formality, really, just kind of get him one of the things.
From the time he first got on the team, you could see there was raw talent.
Yeah.
But by the time he actually had his name on the pro board.
Yeah.
The talent arc was
just crazy,
huge,
off the charts. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So, just to interject a little bit, so we're 85, we're in the mid 80s, and one of the ways Bo, to me at least, has described Gary Sanderson is he was a hardcore punk rock dude. How much of that played into what was going on in the 80s? Was music a big part of that? What was your involvement in something outside? And to me, again, I look back with, as a kid of the 80s, to me, skateboarding was always punk, man. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. It's changed since then, but clearly that was the Venn diagram was a lot tighter back in those days. Yeah. So how big of a part of your life was that at the time and your involvement or what you were doing? Or were you playing in bands or just involved in going to the shows?
Yeah, you know, I love all kinds of music, period. You know, I was exposed to a lot of different kinds of music when I was young. But, punk was the music back in those days, you know.
Yeah.
That and the kind of the new wave scene and all that stuff. You know, rock of the 80s and key rock and all that. But there were certain punk bands that I really liked, Adolescence and stuff like that. Yeah. But I wasn't heavy listening. I listened to them. I liked them.
Yeah.
I didn't go to shows or anything like that. Yeah. I didn't do a lot of that until I was older. Bo got me into the Cramps, which I've seen them several times since.
Literally one of the first tapes I bought was the Cramps self-titled.
Goo
Muck and all that stuff on there.
In fact, part of his graphics, you know, really kind of represents the Cramps.
The cover of that self-titled LP. Yeah. And it's actually, like, it's funny because if you're just sort of like I was, like, being introduced to the Cramps through the artwork on the cover of the thing, you just expect that thing to be... Like listening to The Exploited, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, you put it on, you're like, oh, this is a different kind of a vibe, you know.
Yeah.
But so much of that, again, in these kind of pre-internet days, or at least being a visual person, that's how you get into things, man. It's a cover album. It's the graphic on the skateboard.
Yes.
But The Cramps was one of the first records I ever got, but it was based on that cover, you know. Yeah. And it was very mild compared to a lot of punk that I got into. It's really kind of a weird surf pop kind of a band. They were all over the place, but
yeah.
But that album cover looks like one of the most punk fucking things in the world.
Oh yeah. And you know, back then, I mean, that really was it. You know, like your skateboard graphics or whatever. Yeah. It was you know, it was like the guy, a gunslinger showing up to, you know, a shootout, you
totally.
Know. Who's the baddest guy?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And so it was really about who had the raddest graphics and, you know, was all that.
Have a visceral response to the visual
nature.
And
a lot of these guys are showing up. I remember the whole thing with, you know, a lot of these guys showing up with the misfit look, you know, with their hair hanging down over their face and stuff like that. But I like that because I was like, I don't want to be like everyone else.
Totally.
Type of thing.
Yeah,
It did have an influence on me to the point in recent years since I played in a surf rock band.
Awesome.
For 12 years.
Killer.
As a rhythm and lead guitarist.
Rad.
As far as that goes. And so the music, especially like if you've watched the movie Pulp Fiction.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
All that music. Dick Dale, that's the kind of stuff I play.
Yeah, awesome. You know, but that came later in life. So you
it came really later in life, music, but that whole punk thing and the Cramps and that guitar that
if you really think about them in the context of what was going on in quote unquote punk at the time, there was nothing like the Dead Kennedys.
Yeah.
And through, they were a surf band, man. I mean, straight up, the way that guy played guitar.
Oh, yeah.
you know, compared to, again, kind of stuff that was coming out at the time, the Dead Kennedys were a complete and bizarro outlier.
Yeah.
One of the first bands I heard that was, like, frightening.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what's going on this record. Should I be listening to this? You know,
yeah, it
political,
was powerful,
you know, introducing
very
politics
powerful.
And
yeah.
the power of it and just the bizarre nature of it. Jello's bizarre vocals and this clean, surfy guitar.
Yep.
But playing lightning fast kind of thrash stuff at the same time. So you can certainly see the through line from a Dick Dale or your ventures into the Dead Kennedys.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and you know, everything's punk really at a certain point, you know, like it's just about being that sort of iconoclast or rejecting other norms about music or whatever, but that through line carries through. But I can certainly see the Dead Kennedys getting you into playing surf music later on down the line.
Yeah.
Totally,
and,
man.
And, the music itself, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, with skateboarding, you know, the fast,
totally,
you know,
intense
music, you know, it was always good for, you know,
charging.
When you're sitting there skating the commie pool and stuff
totally.
Like that, you know,
and
that, but yeah, in fact, in recent years, when I listened to interviews with Jello Biafra and or Henry Rollins, and
sure,
I have a even more of a respect for them. I mean, I love their music, but when you listen to them and how intelligent they are,
absolutely,
you know, and just their stances on things
totally.
And stuff like that, it's not that I didn't think they were intelligent, but
but
you get to know people outside of their musicianship,
absolutely,
you know, as far as that goes.
And well, and especially back then when the, you know, the mainstream reaction to that kind of music was, this is anti-music, this is horrible, this is noise.
Yeah.
And you got some really articulate, intelligent people behind these things.
Absolutely.
Man. I mean, look at Greg from Bad Religion. You know, you've got some scholars behind these projects back in the day, and you know, mainstream music or America or the world wasn't ready for that at the time. They couldn't.
Yeah.
They couldn't really accept the fact that there was thoughtfulness behind this type of music.
Exactly.
And to hear these guys speak, you're like, oh man, these guys are on the level across the board, you know?
Yeah.
And it makes you want to really fly the flag a little bit more, you know?
Yep.
It's like, no, punk isn't stupid,
no,
brain dead music, man.
Nope.
You know, there's a lot going on here, you know,
yeah,
if you take the time to really like listen to it, you know,
but
it's, music's been a massive influence for me.
Yeah.
It seems it has for you. And,
yeah,
and I did get a kick out of Bo. He's like, man, Gary was a hardcore punk, man. He was a punk rocker.
I did like it. Yeah.
Well, I think of the, you know, the Atomic, which again, I don't know the name. I call it the Atomic Head Gary graphic, but you know, it's like
based
we talked about.
Screamers.
Yeah. It looks like the Screamer's head, man.
Yeah.
You know, totally.
Yeah.
You can see the influence.
Also kind of looks like
right.
Hair.
Yeah,
yeah.
You had the hair back then, right?
Oh, it was, you know.
Now, you know, I got to interject here.
Yeah.
Because Gary has a very clean cut look.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I can see that today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very suave looking dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Dennis the Menace.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, underneath that clean veneer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can see there's some real.
Yeah.
Sure.
Stuff going.
Yeah.
In,
yeah.
Gotcha. Going on in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, everybody was doing the leather jacket or whatever, and you know, you had guys like Owen who would go with the mohawks and stuff, but you didn't
Steve
do
Caballero
totally
faction
exactly I mean, clearly there's a through line with music and skateboard, like we said, the Venn diagram there's very tight, but mostly just curious as to, you know, how that kind of played into your life or influencing you or influencing your skating, like you say, you know, there's nothing better than putting on something fast and angry and furious to get you all charged up and go skate, which is funny because in more recent years and probably just as I got older, like, some of my favorite footage nowadays is to watch guys skate into, like, jazz or jazz-influenced hip-hop. I mean, it's like, because now you get, it's so smooth, man. It's a completely different vibe.
Yeah.
It's almost like you could put the old Ray Barbie stuff in that camp, too, man.
Right.
It's like, Ray Barbie's, like, listening to jazz.
Yeah.
Dwayne Peters was, like, listening to, you know, whatever.
Right.
But it's music. It's all tied into skating, and it's, I certainly think it influences the style of how people skate. So I guess my question to you is, did it make you kind of this... Were you a really aggressive, charged-up skater, you know? How would you describe a skating, Bo? Because to your point, you know, some guys have this very smooth, mellow style, and, you know, it's a different kind of vibe.
I would say when you would see Gary getting ready to drop in, that's one thing. And when you saw him skate, it was, unless you knew him, it was kind of unexpected.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, holy crap. I didn't expect that.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, yeah. Subverting some expectations.
Blowing them away.
Awesome.
You know, and his style is, I would say, aggressive.
Yeah.
But smooth.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Not like, you know, Smith had this full surf style.
Sure.
Because he was a surfer.
Yeah, yeah.
Gary's was skateboard style.
Yeah,
and it was strict, skateboarding.
Yeah.
No influence by, you know, surf or skiing or whatever.
Yeah.
He wasn't a tennis style.
Right, right. Yeah.
Skateboard.
It was just 100% skateboard.
Yeah, the guy the guys that influenced, I mean, my influence were skateboarders.
Yeah.
You know, other skateboarders.
Yeah. Who were your big influences at the time? I guess in that period when you were kind of going amateur, getting onto a team and stuff. Who were you looking at like, man, that's the guy?
Obviously the Sims guys, because I know they were doing really good. Andrick was my hero because I had his board.
Cool.
And just some of the stuff that he was doing.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I look back at some of the pictures of him doing his frontside airs over the canyon at Big O with the capsule.
And, yeah.
You know, the guy was doing stuff that at heights that no one was doing.
Yeah.
Mike Smith.
Sure.
Definitely Steve Caballero.
Mm-hmm.
In the later years, one of my big favorites, and I miss the guy, is Jeff Phillips.
Sure. Yeah, man.
That guy, way underrated.
Yeah.
Way underrated. Totally. That guy was amazing. Dwayne Peters a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I always liked his aggro.
Yeah, style. I was gonna say he took some aggression from Peters for sure. Yeah.
But the obviously skating with the Alba brothers.
Yeah.
You had to kind of stand back and because once they were there, they just took over.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But in a way, you know, that you were just like amazed at that. How they skated.
Totally.
I mean, especially the combi pull. I mean, you know, Steve Alba, you know, he hit that combi pull and I was just waiting for coping to go flying.
Right.
You know?
I mean,
chips to get in your eyes.
Chris
Miller too. I mean, he was he commanded that pool.
Yeah.
The whole park. I really, out of all the guys, I think Caballero was probably my favorite.
Talk about style. Watching him is awesome. His style is so sick. Well, he was always a little older guy, especially when he was a kid, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you see that kid skating, you're like, what? That's a toddler. I mean, he's looking phenomenal. He looks like he's, you know.
Yeah.
His style is just obviously through the roof, man.
Yeah. Because the first time I actually watched him skate in real life was at the Gold Cup at Pipeline.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
And, you know, that was the finals. Yeah. And he dropped in there. And, of course, everyone's waiting for him to do the Caballero.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that was the trick.
Yeah.
You know, and here's this little guy. He drops in, you know, I was like, oh my God, I can't even believe he can get up to the coping yet.
Yeah.
You know, type
man.
Thing.
It's crazy.
And to see him come up out of the coping to a Caballero, and he did it so smooth. And it was just like
crazy.
Freaking amazing.
I know.
You know?
And he looked so small back then.
But in later years, even, you know, his skating obviously progressed and doing boneless ones.
Yeah.
Anyone to do a backside boneless one in the combi pool, I mean,
hats off.
And then finally, I think Lance Mountain was him and Lester Kasai.
Rad.
In fact, Lester helped me a lot at the end.
Rad. Yeah. Shout out Lester, man.
Yeah.
Richard family for sure. That's awesome. And Lance Mountain, I mean, I think everybody talks the same way about Lance Mountain. I mean, I think sometimes his skating goes overlooked or underrated because they talk so much about his character.
Yeah.
And what he did for skateboarding, the fact that he showed you that skateboarding can be fun and you don't maybe have to take yourself as seriously. And that's what I always appreciated about that aspect because, again, I was never great. I knew early on I wasn't going to be a pro skater, man. I loved the hell out of it. I peaked in 18 to 19 to 20 years old, you know, but I loved it. But the thing I appreciate about Lance was that you don't have to take yourself so seriously all the time, man.
Right.
But I think I think that discredits a lot of his skating. And I think he even discredits himself. It's a little bit reductive to just put him into this character kind of a vibe because he was a great skater, man. Phenomenal and very influential, you know. He was awesome. Great personality, great vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, all those guys were great. But
And a shout out to Alan Losey, too. In fact, I got to do a bunch of skate sessions with him out at the ramp. I was skating at the time on Fontana and great guy, and no one can skate that pull harder at Del Mar than him. And I'll never forget in the finals when he made it to the finals. I mean, the stuff that the grinds went on like for days. I mean, he was just so fast and so powerful.
Awesome.
So another awesome skater.
That's rad. So there comes a point when it's pro time, right? I mean, was there a contest or a pivotal moment, or was there something that went, okay, Tempe, look, man, it's time. Was it Tempe?
Well, we decided Tempe was going to be the contest I was going to turn pro.
So you kind of decided pre-contest, or you were going to wait
for
the results?
Yeah, I think it was kind of after I did Expo and the amateur series that I won and that. And And then we just says, you know, now's the time.
Rad.
You know, and we came out with my graphics and the Atomic guy, the guy, yeah. Atomic Boy.
Yeah.
And I remember having two boards set up. One was for street and one was for the ramp and that.
Awesome.
It's a funny story with all that, but I flew out for that contest and there was another pro. I won't mention names, but there was another pro on the plane and we were talking and stuff and he goes, hey, what board are you riding? I says, oh, it's mine. He goes, yours? And I go, yeah. So I'm turning pro. And I remember him laughing at me. He laughed. He actually like, are you serious? He like, why are you turning pro? You know, type of thing. And I was like, oh, okay. I was kind of bummed.
Yeah, man. Know,
obviously. So I ended up skating a street contest and I actually placed in the top 10. So mm-hmm. I did good. In fact, to the point where I know I got a bonus check for that.
That's
from,
right.
Now we're talking.
And Tracker sent me a check. And then I was riding for Santa Cruz Speed Wheels at the time. Okay. And they took care of me too. Then I was getting ready for the ramp contest. And that's when I came down off a backside air and I threw the board down in front of me and I came down, I landed on my foot on the board. And so the board went like this and it's folded my ankle.
It. Yeah.
And I rolled it so hard, I thought I had snapped it.
Damn.
And so they had to carry me off and I didn't get to skate the ramp contest after that, but I was doing really good on the ramp. In fact, I love that ramp.
Yeah.
But that was it. That was my.
What became of that guy that was talking some trash about you going pro?
Well, he was really good. He was on one of the teams.
Sure,
you know.
Yeah,
we can edit rock star this teams. Out.
Yeah, that's true. We'll beep it. We can always beep it. That's I'm just curious to know now. We will cut it. I give you. Okay. All right. All right. Okay.
Okay.
But anyways,
we will definitely bleep that. But I was curious. We had to know.
I mean, to be honest with you, I mean. Is a fantastic skater, so
sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's, you know,
but still,
you take know. It for what it's worth. There's no shortage of ego in skateboarding. You know, and you know, I go through this all the time. It's like the people that I kind of see becoming most successful have kind of an overabundance of arrogance, and it's not necessarily a personality I respond well to, and it explains why some people maybe don't become as successful because they are humble people that don't go out of their way to. Hype themselves 24 hours a day and but you know there's something to say about that. Having that confidence is what propels some people to the next level, but I just, you know, I think I interact better with people that maybe don't have so much of that personality in them, because you know you feed off of that too and you just think, man, like, yeah, you're good, but it doesn't give you any sort of right to be lousy to people, man, you know. Like, and at the end of the day, no matter what it is, it's just skateboarding, man.
Yeah.
Or if you're in a band, big deal, man. You play guitar. I mean, you know, you're just a dude. Yeah. You know, like, drop the ego. But there's a lot of that in skateboarding.
I feel like I redeemed myself with the street contest and that. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, there was a lot of pros that were at least, you know, they were nice with me. You know, they were good.
And,
I was accepted, you know.
Yeah.
And so. Yeah. You know, the Texas guys, you know, Craig Johnson and Rad. John Gibson, those guys. I love those guys, man. Those guys are fantastic. Those guys were down to earth. You know,
like, real guys. A
bunch of jerks, you know.
That's awesome.
But, you know, even Stevie and Christian was really cool. And, you know, Rad. There was a lot of really cool guys.
Yeah.
You know, so it was good.
Yeah.
I was amazed just to be standing next to him skating.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the contest.
Yeah, it's got to feel just incredible. Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. It's awesome. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that first pro graphic. Who was responsible for that graphic? We'll call it the Atomic Man.
That was Spencer Borsch.
So that was Spencer. Classic Spencer.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All the way.
Was it your concept? Did you give him a rough idea? Or was Spencer just like, get out of the way, I'm going to do something cool?
No. Spencer, I think we talked and he was going to work on some graphics and he says, Gary, come on down, you know? And, so I came down and he showed me the graphics. I says, yeah, I like that. So that's really cool.
Awesome. That was easy.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. So, that was,
That was it.
Did Spencer
cut it, clip? That was it, man.
It's done. Do it. Print it. Boom, go print them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there conscious, or at least that you know of from Spencer, was there a deliberate Screamers kind of influence there, or maybe just kind of a subtle, not so much? Did you know Spencer to be a massive Screamers fan? Because you can see it in that graphic, you know.
Well, Spencer was and is lead singer of Shattered Faith,
which
is a pretty seminal.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Southern California punk rock sure. band. So, you know, the Screamers were,
yeah,
you know, part of that whole scene yeah, yeah. too.
Peers for him at the time.
Yeah. yeah. And, you know, the Screamers head kind of looks like on their album cover, mm-hmm. kind of looks like Gary with spiky
totally.
Hair.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, as far as the Atomic stuff going on, yeah. I don't know. You'd have to ask. We got to get Spencer on.
It was the 80s, I guess. Yeah. Atomic symbols in there. Just yeah, get some
I think
wild
that was just Spencer's own take. And, yeah. you know, Spencer, I love the guy. He's so animated and so, like, energetic. Yeah. You know? Like,
Spencer, hey, if you ever hear
this,
check
this out, you know.
Like, get on the
I
episode.
Like it. You know, let's do it.
Awesome.
You know,
that was it. That's great when it goes that way, too, man. Yeah. I mean, I to speak as an artist or a graphic artist, man. Yeah. I've had some troubling writers and clients. Oh, well, let's make 50. I don't like that. Let's tweak that. So to come in and like have somebody hit it on the head and you're just like, man, I'm stoked. Rad. Let's run it. That's awesome, yeah. man. First try.
Yeah.
So what happens? Bo, kind of keep us up to speed when Gary goes pro, man. I mean, you've got the pro model out. What do you – you guys are advertising pretty heavily in Thrasher back in those days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. yeah.
Definitely. So – and I've certainly got – prints and copies of Sanderson ads in there. How's the board do? How's Madrid
well.
Doing at this point, right? Like to getting the name out there, getting guys out there?
We were doing really well. I mean, we weren't Powell. Yep. We weren't Sims.
Yeah.
We weren't Vision.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
Yeah. But as close as we could be
yeah.
with the limitations that yeah. we had, Gary just fit right in with it. I don't remember if Schmelzer had his board before yours or after. I think maybe after.
Yeah.
But at that point, we had Smith.
Yep.
Lucero.
Yep.
Ken Park.
Yep.
You, Gary. Bryce.
Right.
My board was still there.
Yep.
Danforth.
Yep.
And Greg Smith.
Doesn't get much better than that, man. It's an incredible, we had an incredible run, man.
We were firing on all cylinders. Yeah,
yeah.
And those were just the pros, and then we
right.
had great ams
right.
as well,
yeah, yeah.
including
my
Michelle.
Sister. Yeah. yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, my sister. Okay. She did a freestyle.
Let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah,
there's probably a lot of people that may not know this.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm pretty well versed, but I don't know this.
Yeah,
you know, how did that kind of come about? Getting your sister on the team.
She was. Rad.
Was this after you were pro, Gary? Was this or
no,
kind of?
No, I think I was still
time?
Amateur.
Yeah,
okay.
Because yeah. we used to do PacSun demos. We'd fly mm-hmm. out to places and
yep.
do demos.
And she's skating freestyle?
Yeah.
Doing freestyle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We okay. did PacSun. We did some Town and Country
yeah.
rad.
Demos. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of women skating.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, of course.
And especially freestyle was kind of the thing, you know?
Yep.
And my sister really liked it, and it was, you know, that was she liked it because it was a more expressive sport
yeah,
that goes
yeah
and,
totally
and she was doing really good with it. And I know because we'd all go together to the skate park, we'd
mm-hmm.
go up to Upland and Greg Smith would be there and they'd be over doing freestyle
yeah.
and then my brother and I would be skating the poles and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and so
that's killer. So you brought her on as an am?
Yeah.
She was doing the contests, and Eric Gary's brother
okay
got swooped up by Powell before I could get him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he became part of the bus.
I know a bit of that story, obviously, but yeah. Yeah. So that was a goal, though, to get the brother Sanderson on Madrid?
Yeah.
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 They swooped
yeah.
him up.
Yep.
Was there any friendly rivalry between you two in those days? Or
no,
was it just we were stoked for each other, you know?
No, we were stoked for each
yeah.
other. I was getting ready to turn pro, and he was amateur.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the tail end of me skating is when he really got into the where he was the top.
Yeah.
You know, for
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
In the mini ramps. That was his thing.
Cool.
Mini ramps.
Sure,
that,
sure,
so.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's rad. So
yeah.
going back, did you guys, I mean, when you were kids, you get into skating at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were just kind of.
Yeah. Shortly after
neck.
I was doing it, you know, he started doing it. And of course, you know, he's my little brother, you know.
Yeah.
I'd look out
yeah.
for him. And
that's rad.
So. Everywhere I went, he went, and
yeah.
you know, we skated everywhere together and stuff
killer.
Like that and stuff. So, yeah, so we pushed each other and that learned from each other.
Was there a point when you guys were both either AM or pro, and did you ever compete against each other in the same contest?
I don't remember skating against each other, but we did do doubles.
Cool.
In a couple of contests. Yeah. Yeah.
That's rad.
In fact, we took third one time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super rad.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier the contribution to skateboarding overall from the Sanderson family. Can we get into a little bit of that? Tell some story. I can tell you
from my perspective, and then, you know, Gary, you're going to be able to tell.
Sure. The
inside scoop.
Yeah.
But Aspo was, you know, the skate parks were closing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Aspo was going the way of all flesh. There was no reason to have skate park versus skate park team. Okay. And there was a bunch of Aspo families that, you know, all wanted to keep still skating together. And I think it was at Upland, your folks and Gene Hoffman. I don't remember if Sonia was in the original meeting or not.
Yeah.
And Frank Hawk, I think, too.
Yeah.
Decided, okay, we're going to keep amateur skateboarding alive. So they developed the California Amateur Skateboard League. And Larry's dad was the first president and ran the contests. And, you know, everybody sings the praises of Frank Hawk, including myself. But Larry really was the first Frank Hawk.
And to hear you say it like that, to your, I mean, that's your point. I know the name Frank Hawk, right? Like, but I don't know this story.
But, you know, he was kind of like Gary.
Very
soft-spoken. Although I could see there was a little bit of a temper there.
A little fire in there.
You know, when he saw the point where it could run itself or it could be passed on to Sonia and Gene, then he was... you guys take it to the next level.
How much did that mean to you at the time as a skateboarder? You know, your dad, like, really stepping up to, like, make sure this was something that you could continue to exist in, man. Like,
you know, you know, having your parents there, you know, so many ways supports, it's a supportive thing, you know. I was always looking for that, hey, am I doing good?
Totally.
You know, mom, dad, you know, how am I doing? You know, totally. Type of thing. When you have your parents there and they're saying, hey, this is good for you. We're here to support you. We're here to support skateboarding and that. That's huge. You know?
Totally.
To be honest with you, I've spent my whole life wanting to know that I've done good for my parents.
I get it.
I haven't, you know.
I get it. Yeah.
And as far as that goes. And so, but yeah, it was huge. And just the hours that they put into it, I mean, that just going all over the place. You know, San Francisco up north, just everywhere and stuff. And it's wearing, especially when, you know, my dad's working a full-time job and stuff like that. And so for them to put the amount of effort and that they did, well, I mean, to take it to the extreme, you know, my dad built a double mini ramp in the backyard just to shoot a video for Powell. but that's how,
man, that's crazy.
How supportive he was.
That's, you know, so great, and, man.
It was a fantastic ramp. I mean, it was, you know, my dad was, you know, he's been in the trade, so he knew all the tricks. And that,
what video did they shoot out there?
I think it was one of the.
I think there's a double in Ban This. Was it?
Like, I think it might have been Ban This or something like that.
Yeah, because I know there's a lot of, there is double footage on a double ramp out there. That's one of my, that was one of my all time favorites. Ban This. That was a great one. Man, that's a cool move on your folks' part, you know?
So, and then they've always been just, you know, really supportive. I mean, just back when I couldn't drive, they would drive me everywhere. And, you know, they were just there for me.
It's fantastic, man. You love to hear it.
Oh, yeah.
So awesome.
Yeah.
And it's completely, it's not different. There are parents out there that are like that. But, you know, skateboarding is, you know, kind of this outlaw sport. So there's so many parents, when we were growing up, that were like anti-skateboard.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, even when I was, I mean, it was, and a lot of people I knew, I mean, look, my parents were great. You know, my folks are great. My dad never understood skateboarding, you know. My mom was really the lifeline there because, you know, she was just, need a new skateboard? I'll get it for you. My dad's like, no, you won't. wait till Christmas, yeah, as we said, you know. But I mean, a lot of kids I came up with were from broken homes, were, yeah, from single parent families, you know. And skateboarding was this escape, man. You know, it wasn't necessarily the norm to have supportive parents. It may not still be today. I mean, yeah, it's definitely become a more socially recognized or acceptable sport or pastime, or however you want to call it. But certainly I came up with, most of the kids I came up skating with were not necessarily supported by their folks, you know. I mean, hell, yeah, it's an outlier kind of a thing, man. So it's super radical that you had that.
Oh, yeah.
It really is, man. Yeah, super awesome.
Yeah.
So, board number two. Things are going pretty good for Madrid, right?
Yeah. Things were going, yeah, okay, really good.
And would you say there was was it an annual thing that you guys would churn out new pros? Was it like, okay, it's...
Churn out new pros or
pro models? Models, models, yeah, yeah. It's like 86, yeah, time probably for new board, 87. Okay.
Yeah. We were trying to, I think a lot of it was trying to stay up with the times.
Yeah. You know, yeah, of course.
You know, the second model was more along the lines of, you know, everyone was starting to do the fishtails, mm-hmm, and the, you know, the cutouts, mm-hmm, and that's that sort of thing. A little bit more dramatic.
Yeah.
As far as that goes.
And so was number two the ants?
Yes.
That was the second graphic.
Yeah. Another's name on it.
Right. With name. An actual
first,
name on it.
Yeah. Which with is, the, yeah, the first one being, yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Right.
Which was an AM model.
Right.
And then,
well, right, he got his name on the Atomic Man, too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so yeah, the Ants was the second.
Yeah, with his. Yeah, I see. Pro, yeah. Of course, yeah, of course. Another Spencer creation.
Well, yeah.
Or kind of. That, yeah, you kind of mentioned it was a bit of a. You kind of put that together, huh?
Yeah, yeah. That was actually kind of an idea that my mom had.
Sick.
That she kind of shared with me. And I said, you know, I like that. I'm going to take it down to Spencer and.
Just Spencer, have him facilitate the
hey,
vision.
Hey, Spencer. And so obviously, yeah, you know, he goes over the copy machine, we start printing things out and,
yeah,
hack here, cut here,
a little cut and paste.
He says, come on down. He's like, I'm gonna show you this. And so he showed me and I was like, yeah, I like it, let's, dude, do it.
It's, you still know, one of my favorite Madrid graphics, yeah, I mean, of all time. I would, you know, I love the all over print stuff, you know, when people got to where they could graduate from printing between the truck holes,
yeah,
and you just took over the board, man. Yeah. It's like, you know, as a graphics guy, give me more on that board, man.
Yeah.
And the ants graphic is just out of control. It's,
yeah,
it's so incredible. Was there significance to the ants? I mean, you said it's kind of a concept you and your mom had kind of played with. What was
not
going on there?
Necessarily, but I did like the band Adam and the Ants.
There you go.
I liked,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and
subconscious,
the twangy guitar stuff.
Sure,
and,
yeah,
know,
yeah.
So it had a little bit of mean to it, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was different.
Yeah,
and
totally,
it was, to me, it looked very, very professional. It,
yeah,
was like, okay,
exactly,
this is,
yeah,
this is like taking it to the next level. It
didn't look like someone just kind of sketched something on your board.
Right.
It looked very deliberate.
Yeah,
very
it was deliberate.
Totally, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And that's a crazy shape, man. That,
yeah,
board
so
is a wild shape.
A little bit the, about that shape.
The Madrid shapes, dude,
I've always
are out of control.
Yeah, I want to kind of share that because that was actually, and I don't know exactly what concave that has on it.
Jerry would know.
Jerry,
we'll pull
we're all
in, yeah,
trying to figure that one out still, but
yeah,
it was one of the ones where it had the tail had a concave in it,
mm-hmm,
too, which I really like. But the shape actually, I'll start with the nose, the snub nose. Part of the reason I wanted to do a snub nose is all the boards I had originally had a round nose.
Yep.
And there at the pipeline, if you shot your board out and it went up in the air and it came back down,
yeah,
and you hit on that point,
yeah,
it just blew the whole nose
exploded
out.
Exploded. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to go with a flat nose.
Interesting.
At least it had the chance of staying together to some degree.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's, yeah.
But the other thing was, is I liked how when I would grab to do, like, you know, sweepers or whatever,
yeah,
I like the feeling of that. It didn't,
yeah,
have a point on it type,
totally,
of thing. The other thing, I don't know if you ever notice on my boards, but my noses are real short.
Okay.
And
sure,
the reason that I like short noses had to do with Ray Bones,
mm-hmm,
and his boards.
Okay.
Totally.
And I liked a real short nose because I wanted the stability.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the newer boards like we have now with,
sure,
the double kicks and that. In fact, the first time I got myself on one of those, but I almost slammed real hard,
yeah,
because,
yeah,
I was coming down in a pool.
Yeah.
The back end came up on,
yeah,
me. I'm not used to that.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like riding,
yeah,
a freestyle board.
Right.
Pool,
right,
the first,
yeah,
time,
yeah,
you know?
Totally.
But then the cutout was kind of like a Dave Andrick board.
Okay.
Yeah.
He of all the original Sims boards, pro boards.
Yeah.
His was one of the only ones him and, well, and I can't say that, Bert Lamar and Fulmer had theirs like that, but,
yeah,
it had a little cutout.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Just keep it interesting.
Yeah, just to keep it interesting.
To it.
And
it
was,
yeah,
kind of like my my homage to them.
Yeah, you know, that's awesome. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that back then, too, it's like you had those Sims where you had, like, channels cut out of them, and you had all these guys doing really interesting things.
Some interesting
anything
things
that kind of set you apart or make your shape a little
bit
different.
Yeah, I think that was really it, because, you know, Christian had his fishtail board, which was extremely popular, and I thought was really cool.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that was a game changer.
I was trying
for
to
kind
of follow that.
Yeah.
I like Bo's shape. Bo's was one of my favorite shapes.
Awesome.
That was a really good design.
Yeah.
So I was kind of trying to kind of follow that a little bit, but put my
your own spin on it.
On it, you know.
It's almost like you get a little more of a geometric bow shape. So less round, a little bit kind of harsh corners, squared off nose, but kind of that.
But I like wide boards. I always, you know, I don't like narrow boards.
Yeah.
I liked having something under my feet.
Totally.
You know, type of thing.
Yeah.
And then when we came out with the MTech concaves and stuff like that, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, that was fantastic.
Totally. We have to get Spencer in here, man. I mean, he's graphic king in Madrid days. I've always loved that Ants board since I've been a part of Madrid. It's one I've wanted to bring back in a reissue, and we've never really had a good enough reference to get that damn art recreated. Yeah. So, you know, if you bringing in an original in damn near mint condition, it's going to help us achieve that quite a bit. So we are going to get that board back in the mix, probably for the first time ever.
Good.
I love that board. Yeah. Love the graphic. Yeah. So stoked to see that thing. What was going on with, like, the team and skating at this time? I mean, as far as your presence in the skate world, the contest, like, how was Madrid out there pushing it? Like, two boards into Gary, right? You're on your second pro model. What's life like on the team for Gary? Like, where are you guys putting your energy and your efforts?
Wow, that's an interesting question to ask. By that point, we were considered one of the teams.
Yeah, totally.
You know, we were
our presence was known.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
And you know, we had already lost a lot of the guys. We lost Jinx, we lost Roskopf, we lost Lucero Lucero was still with us for a little while, but you know, we'd lost a lot of the farm team guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were hell bent on it no longer being a farm
awesome.
Team.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
We were going to be a presence. Yeah.
Challenge people to leave this team again. You're not going to want to leave this team to go anywhere else.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
So, that's what we were doing. We were selling a lot of boards.
Excellent.
And
doing a lot of demos still.
Yeah.
Heavy on the demos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that really was really benefited Madrid was doing the demos, you know, because, you know.
I mean, for me, that was my, I mean, that exposed me to everything was guys coming through doing demos.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. I mean, the first time I ever met Tony Hawk, he had just launched Birdhouse and he came through town doing, I mean, it's like, that's when you saw true skateboarding. And it wasn't like you had to buy a ticket and go to some event. You just go to your local park and holy cow, here's these dudes just skating.
Yeah.
With people to put on a show. And demos to me were just a huge part of my coming up skating, man. It's hugely beneficial.
I know for us, all of us, we had a blast because, you know, we got to let our hair down, you know, we got to, it wasn't the pressure of having to do in a contest anything like that. It was just go skate. And it's funny. We'd screw around and try different tricks and stuff.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, hey, I just learned a new
trick.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
throw that into the mix.
But
yeah.
You know, and the cool part was, is, you know, we felt like rock stars. I mean, it was crazy time, you know, and, just the amount of people that would show up to these things, you're blown away. You know, I remember doing, we did the town and country demos in San Francisco at the Macy's department stores on their fancy wood floors, you know, and doing a freestyle trick and having the board shoot clear across the store, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that,
take out a mannequin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But skateboarding was changing too.
Yeah.
It was changing because we were down to two parks.
At
so that this point. Was the period when they were tearing out all the parks. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, they closed Skate City, which was such a bummer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got to skate there. They ended up closing Lakewood. All these parks started closing, and it was kind of the thing, you know. And so the ramps, the half pipes, the ramp contests were the big thing.
Backyard ramps, man.
And that was back when they had that big the contest that Vision did, where K-Rock was there.
Or the Slam or whatever.
Yeah, it was here locally, but it –
Skate Escape was, I don't know.
It was it was crazy, and it was inside this big auditorium. It was more like a rock concert than a skateboard contest. Yeah, totally. You know? But that was the future, you know?
Yeah.
And so I had started my job, you know, my which would be my career.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was traveling to contests on the weekends doing red-eye flights and coming back, you know, in a so skateboarding was really changing in that aspect of it. And right, I would say about 80, it was about 86 when I, Jack Smith, we were doing demos up there or something.
Yeah,
And Jack lined me up with Kryptonix. And that was a big thing for me because I was actually their first pro at that because they were starting up again.
I
was their first pro. And that was a huge thing for me.
Yeah.
Because Kryptonix, you know, I'd already had Madrid. They were extremely supportive of me. Awesome. And now I had this wheel sponsor that was also being really supportive of me. Rad. And then Jack was being really supportive of me. And Kryptonix, their wheels were rad.
Oh, man. Yeah. Back in the day, that, that in was fact, the wheel.
I was looking at some of the downhill wheels out here where they have the nylon plastic cores in them.
Yeah.
I remember when Kryptonix came out with their those core wheels, and there were some of the fastest wheels on the planet.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I have some Kryptonix 56 originals in my garage that I'm not put on a board yet.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm going to put them on something, but you can't get them anymore, man.
No,
you
know? So,
but they're green, and they're just, you know, they're that classic 56 Kryptonix with the core.
Yeah.
Best.
And when I started with Kryptonix and that, and then we were doing ramps all the time, and we had a ramp out in Fontana, Gilbert's ramp out there, and it was a really good ramp. And it was, I don't know, something happened, and I started progressing fast as far as that goes. And I was doing stuff I hadn't done before, you know. And,
rad.
Problem was is that I get to the contest, and, you know, half the time it was, you know, trying to pull all that stuff off and the pressure and stuff that. But
And you said you had started what would become your career around that point. What was that? What was your job?
I started working for the government,
okay.
Local government, as far as that goes, and I got into the building trades and that. It took off from there. And what was happening is that's when life started happening.
Sure,
you know? You start going, okay, skateboarding and injuries, flying out red eye flights.
Yeah,
Bo wasn't around anymore. That I took a hit with that a little bit because when he left,
Come back.
he really
here he is.
Yeah, I know. But for me, this is my team captain. Yeah, he was like a big brother to me.
Dude,
you know,
nobody's got a bad thing to say about Bo.
Yeah, when he left, although you know, I have to say Spencer, he was a good team captain too. But I missed Bo on that, and I was going to the contest by myself and stuff, and it just wasn't the same. You know, skateboarding was becoming a little weird.
Totally.
At that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It became more of a personality contest than it was about who was good.
Yep.
And guys were showing up to contests and just acting stupid stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I got turned off by it.
Yeah. So it wasn't as much fun.
No. I don't think it was, you know.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that happened too was McGill brought in the 540.
Yeah.
And Tony doing all his crazy tricks.
Yeah.
And it became one of these things where, look, if you even want to take and be near these guys, you had to start learning these tricks.
Yeah.
And I remember just being out there at Pipeline, and of course, you trying to do those kind of tricks in the combi pool, good luck, right?
Yeah.
I remember it's Mickey Alba there, you know, I would sit there and I was trying to encourage him because Mickey Alba was trying to do 540s on the face wall and the square pool and stuff,
that's
you know.
Crazy.
But all of us were sitting there going, man, how do you keep up with Tony Hawk and these guys, you know? And so I think that's what it really changed, and there was this big gap.
Totally. You still had another board with Madrid after the Ants, right? That was the final model.
Yep, that was
that's
the final
world. The world according to Gary.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
which, we just that was the first time I'd seen that graphic. Is just recently we actually found the original art of it in our archives. Yeah,
good.
So we have that, and it's the first time I'd seen it. I think Jerry barely remembered it.
Yeah,
we couldn't place who did the art.
Yeah,
but it's a great graphic. It's hilarious. It's a comic panel of a little guy going, yeah. Is this
secret agent with a ray gun type of thing?
Is this you? Is this the world according to Gary? Like, what's going on in this graphic with the whole storyline of a kind of comic book panels of the world according to Gary?
That was it. I always liked that. Again, it goes back to I had so many influences. You know, James Bond and the James Bond theme and the spaghetti western.
Sure.
You know, I was a big fan of Clint Eastwood.
Awesome.
But you know, music and. Mm-hmm. Just all that, you know, it all kind of influenced me. And I can't remember exactly how we landed on that graphic or anything. I think it was just, I can't even remember their names, but it was the twins and these young ladies that were here doing the graphic designs at some time.
Mm.
And they came out with this, and I was like, I fell in love with it. I was just like, that is so rad, you know?
And again, it's like the opposite side of what you're talking about earlier. It's a complete outlier to what you guys were doing. And we're just trying to be so extreme and in your face and aggressive and like gnarly. And you got this thing that's like, doesn't look like any of your other graphics.
Yeah.
Doesn't really look like anything else on Madrid at the time, frankly. Right. But it's such a fun, cool graphic, and again, maybe it's not taking itself as seriously as we got to have bat wings and skulls and blood.
No, hey, settle down.
Hey, look, man, you know who you're talking to. That's my favorite stuff. But,
progressing.
It's different, you know. It's a total outlier in what was going on graphically at that time. And again, to discover that art, I had not ever seen it. Jerry was pretty faint on it.
Yeah.
And then you brought in a board.
Yeah.
With that on it today, which is rad. But so, what year was that the World According to Gary came out?
I want to say that was probably 87, 88.
Yeah, late 80s.
Because I stopped skating in 89.
Okay.
In fact, my last contest was at the Cal Palace. Is that what it was? In Ohio?
Oh, Cal Skates.
Cal Skates, yes. Mm. I think they put on the last pro contest. That was a street contest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was my last.
So when you've got this, what would become your last model out? Did you have a sense that it was kind of coming to an end? Were you thinking about, well, what's the next graphic going to be? What's the next stage in my skating career is going to be? Or were you kind of already starting to maybe feel like things were changing a little too much? You know, are you looking onto the future, new things to do in life? I mean,
there was a lot of compounding things. Like I said, Bo had left, and you know, you go to a contest by yourself. You know, Mike wasn't skating. Mike Smith wasn't skating.
Yeah.
A lot of the like, even Ken and those guys had left already.
Right.
And so, you know, I was going to contest by myself and stuff. And I felt like, you know, shoot, Madrid, we had built up this whole thing. And then all of a sudden it kind of just.
Yeah.
I think it crumbled a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But I was getting hurt a lot.
Sure.
That was a big thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about my career, and I can't keep showing up with my arm in a cast or on crutches. You know?
Yeah, totally.
I had a relationship at the time. There was just a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
I discovered mountain biking at the time
because
it was kind of a summer thing that I was kind of starting to do to kind of keep me in shape for skateboarding when I was on vacation.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of that transition from skateboarders into that kind of a world, mountain biking or cycling in general, but certainly mountain biking. I mean, I know a lot of guys I've worked with at different companies, skate companies, that have gone on to not only work with or start these companies, but we're kind of avid mountain bike dudes too at the same. It's another extreme kind of action sport, but you know,
and well, believe it or not, skateboarding had a big tie to it for me because I started mountain biking, and then I had my first like pro bike that I got, which was very high end at the time, but anyways, I started doing really good with it. I went to a mountain bike race just for the heck of it one day in Big Bear.
Cool.
And I happened to be standing there along a dirt road as part of the course. And I walked up, and there was a bunch of people with tracker shirts on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I walked up, but got looking closer, and it was Larry Bama and a couple other people I didn't know and they were there. And so I went up and said, Larry, I said, how you guys doing? And he goes, what are you guys doing here? He goes, oh, he says, yeah, he says, I got a team. We're building mountain bikes.
Totally.
You know?
That's cool. Yeah.
And I says, wow. He says, you know, it's funny because I'm racing in mountain bikes now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
there's
anyways,
a lot of that. Yeah. There's a lot of that Venn diagram, man, into mountain biking.
That took off.
Yeah.
That took off. And they showed up at a mountain bike race, and
rad.
I took first in my
no
class.
No kidding.
Wow.
And did you just randomly go in and like sign up and do this contest? You're like, I'm just going to go. And
I was just going to different races locally and stuff. Yeah. And they happened to be there, and he watched me, and I got a call a week later. Says, "Come down and get your mountain bike," and he's put me on the team. And
man, that's rad.
I ended up doing that nationally for a while, and did really good.
Sick. That's awesome, man. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a whole nother.
Yeah.
Larry Bama and Louise. Yeah. And,
that's for the mountain biking podcast we'll do next.
Yeah. But
no, there is a lot of that. No, there really is. A lot of the DC guys when I was over there went on to be mountain, you know, working for these companies, starting companies, whatever.
Santa Cruz started their own.
Totally. Exactly.
Yeah. Roscop and those guys.
Yeah. And honestly, like, you know, I like to ride a bike these days more than I'm going to go and actually skate a small bowl or anything, man.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm getting on the bicycle.
But for those.
We're on a skateboard podcast.
Well, I'll cut that part out.
Yeah,
I'll
for those people out there that think skateboarding's dangerous, mountain biking is even more.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Was there a definitive point, though, when you say, you know, you stopped skating, the final board kind of came out on Madrid. Did you put the skateboard go away forever?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Were you still out there doing it for fun and maybe getting back to its pure form where you weren't having to sort of...
Yeah, I kind of stepped away from it for a little while. I think it was kind of just taking a breather from it. But then my brother was doing really good with Powell and that. And,
sure.
I don't know what happened with my board and stuff at the time. But anyways, I know this is blasphemy, but he ended up getting me a Ray Barbie board, which is kind of close to the shape of Bo's board at the time. And
Ray's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
And shout out to Ray's. Yeah. Yeah. When I was coming up.
Yeah, we love Ray. My brother and I do.
Dude, Ray's part in Band This. Yeah. Still to this day, it's one of my favorite parts all day long. I watch it all day.
Yeah. So we had the ramp in the backyard. And so every once in a while, I get out there and get on the Ray Barbie board and skate. Awesome. Of course, my brother was shredding all over the place.
Yeah, sure.
Couldn't do half of what he was doing. But,
sure.
But yeah, I was doing it. And then, you know, here I am now. You know, I've got a family and my daughter. She glommed on it for quite a while.
Really?
And
yeah,
we came down here. Jerry got us all set up and
sick.
I was skating with her. And then my youngest son, he was doing it. And so I go to skate parks with him.
Awesome.
You know, and stuff.
Yeah.
So
rad. Yeah. You still out there cruising around, rolling around
every once in a while.
Yeah.
In fact, they're just finishing building a new park, in Covina.
Sick.
Just up the street from my house.
Oh man. Yeah. That's killer. Awesome,
it's the first
man.
Skate park in Covina. So, yeah. Hats off to the city of Covina for doing that.
That's killer.
It's finally happening. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how that works. You got a way to, when you're a kid coming up and you don't have skate parks, you're like, you know, you go and find your own way to develop the city into your skate park. And I swear, every time as you get older and you become an adult, suddenly they're building all these parks in your town or your city that you grew up in. You're like, where the hell was this when I was a kid, man?
Yeah, you got to remember is back Pipeline and, Del Mar, you know, I mean, pipeline closes because they were getting sued, you know, and, you know, these people that would, you know, they were looking for a paycheck, you know, and stuff like that. And it was sad.
Totally.
So it was really cool to finally see the cities realizing that, hey, we got to get these kids away from the shopping malls and the, you know, I don't think they're doing that, but but at least
give them a place to go. Man.
They got a place to go. Totally. It was a smart thing for the cities to do. So,
Do you keep up well with a lot of the guys that you kind of came up skating with, or do you have what's your connection like to skating these days? I mean, if there is one, you know, or you know, I know you.
It's pretty distant. Yeah. You know, I Facebook. I didn't want to do Facebook for the longest time, and then when I got
good on you,
I realized. I got Bo and Terrence and those guys and stuff, and so I was following them and
realize it could be used for good and not just evil.
Yeah, for sure. So
have you ridden pump tracks yet?
I haven't.
Oh my god, I had some surgery and some nerve damage, and I was off the board for a couple of years, and Billy Ruff got me down
on really?
The pump track down in San Diego, Carmel Valley, and it's like having fun skateboarding.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I actually want to try one out. Yeah, I want to do that. Madrid something else trip. I'd like to try out too, and shout out to Jack Smith.
Mm-hmm.
You know him doing those skateboarding across America.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so hey, Jack. You know, if you still want to do something,
he's got some pointers. Let's talk. Sure. Yeah. He's the right guy to get some input from. Yeah. What's your life like today, Gary? I mean, what's life like today in 2024, man?
Well, you know, I'm raising a family.
Yeah.
Got kids, you know, that are going to, I got two of them going to college and one getting ready to graduate high school.
Yeah.
Getting ready to retire here pretty soon.
Excellent.
My youngest son and I are going to start another surf band. He plays drums, so we're gonna do that. I build guitar amplifiers. I repair and stuff. I do that as a hobby.
Dude, all right, killer.
I don't know. I do some trail running now because I can't afford a mountain bike anymore. Yeah, they made it a rich man sport now. So
yeah, it's like snowboarding. Yeah, can't afford all this stuff.
But every once in a while, in fact, I do have my boards and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to probably get out there and do it a little bit now that you got a skate park there.
Yeah, for sure. Is there a spot where people can check out your amp building and repair? Are you shout outs to what you do, or is it more of a hobby kind of a thing?
Right now it's a hobby. Yeah. I mean, I do help. In fact, the guitarist in the band I was in, he does go around and he finds vintage amps and stuff, and I service them for him and sells them.
Yeah.
But yeah, at some point I'm hoping to start my own amplifier business.
Awesome. And you're building them too?
Yeah.
Building amps. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's killer.
Yeah.
And what's your setup when you play? What guitar do you play? What's your preferred? What's your rig? What's your rig, man?
Usually Fender amps, as far as that goes. I mean, I like the tweed basements a lot.
About twin reverbs from back in the day.
Twin reverbs. Yeah. Can't afford a Showman. Those are crazy expensive.
Yeah.
I am playing Japanese manufactured Moserites Ventures models.
Killer.
Yeah. Love the Ventures.
I have an Eastwood Knock.
There you go.
And it's you know,
Eastwood. Yeah. They it's make a decent guitars, guitar, man.
Yeah, for that style, you know, it's your Moserite Vox kind of knock in the Eastwood world. But that's kind of my surfy guitar. But Fenders and it's like a twin reverb, man. It's hard to beat for that kind of stuff.
Yep,
that's killer. Yeah. I have a Japanese manufactured what they call the pawn shop Mustang.
Yes.
So yeah, it's kind of the best of Jags and Mustangs, and it's you know made in Japan model, so it's incredible.
Yeah, I love all the Fender offsets.
Me too.
I used to play the Jag and Jazzmaster a lot.
Yep. I love an offset guitar, and this Japanese Mustang Frankenstein I have, it's one of my favorites, man. So, but at the same time, I'm a Gibson guy sometimes too. You know, just depends, man.
The pursuit of tone.
Exactly, man. Yeah. But if you're playing some twangy, surfy stuff, I got to give it to Fender for all that stuff, man, for sure. Dude, this has been a blast, Gary. I mean, thank you so much for coming out. If you got any shout-outs you want to throw out, man, now's the time. But
Shout-out to my mom, my dad, and my wife, and my kids. Awesome. I love you guys. Thank you for the support. Obviously, the Madrid family. I mean, these guys... They raised me too, you know. They're my other family.
Killer.
And especially Bo. Glad to see Bo.
Again, Bo Brown. Always. Always for Bo
Brown. Man. Go wild.
Well, thanks for coming out, man, and taking your time out of your day and talking with us. You're one that we've talked about getting out here for a while. So, and now I'm honestly excited to go look at these decks again and check out these graphics and stuff. So, thanks again, man, for being here. It was a blast.
Thank you for having
me. Appreciate it, dude.
Yeah.